This episode is not a substitute for professional healthcare advice. For more information on looking after your mental health, please seek support from a healthcare professional. Welcome to the first episode of the Powered by Heart podcast. My name is Bree McDermott-King, and over the next few episodes, I'll be speaking with some of the University of Hertfordshire's most inspiring graduates to find out how they overcame some of their biggest challenges and to learn how they achieved their professional success. I'll also be speaking to some of the university's own experts to hear advice on how you can get ahead in your own career. I studied at Hearts myself, so this podcast is very close to my heart. I graduated in 2018 with a bachelor's degree in music industry management, and my time at the university was truly, truly life-changing. I can't wait to share memories with other Hearts graduates over the next few weeks. On today's episode, we're going to find out how to better look after your mental health, and I'm delighted to be here with James Lindsay. Hi, James.
Hi, thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
No worries, always. So James graduated back in 2012. With a master's in marketing. But sadly, in 2016, he suffered from psychosis, but has since written a book about his recovery called Befriending My Brain, A Psychosis Story. And he now works at the Hertfordshire Mind Network and has spoken lots about his experience with national campaigns, working with the likes of McLaren and the Premier League. So really incredible stuff. James, I mean, to kick things off, how are you? How are you doing? How's everything?
Yeah, pretty good for this time of year. I know it's quite a difficult time of year for some people. So yeah, just feeling kind of really lucky to have what I have and things like that. And looking forward to hopefully another good year ahead.
Yes, 100%. And so yeah, you are a Hearts graduate. So before we get into your book and everything, could you just tell us about your time at the university? How was it?
Yeah, I really loved it. So I did my undergrad at Portsmouth Uni, and I wasn't sure whether to carry on there for the masters or to, because it was near where I lived at the time, my family home in Watford, so decided to just move back in with them. It'd be easier to do a master's, and I made some really good friends, and I was really impressed with the uni in terms of like the staff and all the facilities and stuff. So yeah, it had everything I needed to have a good experience.
Oh, I love that. That's good. And I realized that it was actually after you graduated that you started experiencing mental health challenges. So could you just walk us through that? Can you tell us what happened?
Yeah, so I was working in a kind of job that I wasn't really suited to and didn't enjoy. And at the same time, I was having problems with an ex-partner relationship wise. And then the actual breakup, and moving back in with, because I was living with my ex at the time as well, and then moving back to family home, that was kind of what triggered the psychosis in terms of the symptoms. So I was getting really poor sleep, like sometimes not sleeping at all during the night, and so I was very deprived, and then I started behaving very out of character, like talking very fast and jumping from one subject to another and getting a bit delusional and having hallucinations, like about being tracked and followed and all sorts. So yeah, ended up getting sectioned, and it was a very kind of horrible experience. I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy, but it was necessary at the time to start my recovery.
So James, could you describe to us what someone who may be suffering from psychosis would experience and what symptoms could be?
Yeah, of course. So it's effectively when you perceive or interpret your reality very different from those around you. And in my case, I thought I was getting messages from sources. Like I thought a company was headhunting me for work, which was never real. And I thought I was getting messages from the radio and the TV and even the weather at one point. It was like a case of being constantly like sort of paranoid as well, that I was being followed and tracked. Like I remember like my phone and my smartwatch, like I'd randomly just take my smartwatch off and throw it across the room thinking, oh, I don't want anyone monitoring my location. And like with my phone, I think I was constantly at the settings, like putting in airplane mode and stuff like that, which for me is completely out of character behavior. Normally I completely understand everything with technology and the how it all works, and that it's not something that would normally bother me at all. So yeah, in general, people behave really out of character, and it can seem strange behavior to people around you. But the thing is, as well, everyone's experience of psychosis is very different and like unique to them. So there are some like kind of maybe common things, but it's kind of, I guess, out of character is one of the main ones. And it's, yeah, what's going on in their head is just very like unique to them, and it's like it's real to them, even though it's clearly to people around you it might be, you know, bizarre. It's to them it's like completely real.
Yeah. Well, firstly, thank you so much for sharing that with us and for your vulnerability, because I think there's such a stigma around mental health, and it's only by being open about personal struggles that sometimes other people feel confident enough to speak about their own.
Course.
So I know that's definitely something that's come from your book, but we'll get on to that. Just before that, I want to speak about your recovery. What was that like? You mentioned being sectioned. Was that the beginning of recovery, or was it quite, a longer process?
Yeah, so the sectioning was like an intervention because I was pretty kind of out of control and I was a danger to myself and others. And so I spent 4 weeks in a psychiatric wards and was put on a lot of heavy medication, which had some very unpleasant side effects in terms of feeling really tired and sedated and stuff. But it was kind of necessary so that I could get the sleep and my brain could slow down. And after I got out, there was still some like aftercare in terms of people coming to my house and seeing me like at least once a week. And I did try and go back to my job that I had at the time, like on a part-time phase return basis, but it didn't work out just because the effects of the medication was so like overpowering. I just couldn't do my job effectively, so I sort of had to leave that. So yeah, it was really hard kind of initially to sort of get back on track. But yeah, it took me more or less kind of to best part of 2 years to actually start making sort of positive steps, I'd say.
And you mentioned aftercare, which I think is really encouraging to hear, actually, that it wasn't just that stint and then you were, kind of left. There was a another stage to your recovery. So who else supported you during that time, and how did they support you?
Yeah, so I had care coordinators from the NHS, which were amazing. Like the staff that came and spoke to me were really good. They just had loads of ideas for how I could kind of live a better quality of life to what I was and how I could kind of slowly get back to the life I had before I got ill. And also my family and friends were like beyond supportive. Like it affected them as well, the whole experience, especially my family. So they were like my rocks and they never gave up on me. And they're the reason why, like one of the reasons I recovered. And it could have got worse, but it didn't. And I think I feel just so lucky to have that support network, because like fast forward now, working in mental health, I know a lot of people don't have that and kind of get into even worse circumstances. So as hard as it was, I still feel like, wow, I was really lucky to only kind of briefly be sectioned and stuff. So yeah.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. I'm really happy to hear that you had that community there to
Yeah.
support, because it really does make a difference. You mentioned earlier that you tried to go back to work, but it was difficult for you. So could you speak about how this experience impacted your professional life as well as your personal life?
Yeah, it was really hard because back in the sort of year sort of 2016, there wasn't really as much working from home as there is now. So like only the kind of the higher up managers was doing that. So I found it really hard to like commute to London five times a week. It wouldn't have been that often because I was doing a phase return, but that was what I was sort of facing. So yeah, it impacted my professional kind of life because my brain was just in a like not in a very good way to be able to be productive and have ideas and the kind of like things I needed to perform the job. And yeah, personally, it made it really hard like to go out and socialize, because I kind of felt like going to friendship groups, I didn't really have anything to contribute. I was just kind of there, and I was really quiet, and I just found it hard to be around other people. Like, even though kind of seeing people did give me a boost, I sort of found it difficult to sort of be part of my situation.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. And I feel like that's why your story is one, so moving, but so valuable, because to hear this description that you've just given us about your experience, and then to see that you're an author, you wrote a book, that's such a journey. And so could you walk us through that? Like, why did you decide to write a book? And what point were you at in your recovery when you'd had that kind of revelation and that desire?
There's lots of different reasons I decided to write it, but mainly to help people, because when I was kind of still in the pit of my, because I had a lot of sort of depression, anxiety following the episodes, the first thing that gave me real hope and made me like it, re it really resonated with me was reading someone else's book. And this like author had been sectioned three times with bipolar. And like reading his story was like reading my own kind of thoughts and experience, like in his words. And it was just like a proper like eureka light bulb moment, like, oh, it's not just me, but also I feel so good as a result of reading this book. Like, maybe I should start speaking about what happened to me in writing. So it led to blogging. Like, I discovered the Mind website and did a blog for them. And like that got really good feedback, and that kind of, I sort of caught the writing bug after that, and like then discovered a blogger who had become an author, and I kind of thought maybe I can emulate what she's done. And so I sort of started writing the book in 2018, when I started kind of having a more positive recovery, like talking with people. And it was like a nice little sort of side project, like that didn't have a deadline, that I could kind of do in my own time.
Right.
So it was kind of 4 years of like on and off writing, basically.
Yeah, I can imagine that. And I guess the question that I want to ask is, what was the writing process therapeutic for you almost, to put it all down into words?
Yeah, because I think before I started writing the book, I hadn't actually processed a lot of what happened to me properly. And so writing the book, particularly like the early parts of the book where I'm talking about the first episode of psychosis, it was really difficult to write. Like, I had to be careful and look after myself that I didn't spend too long writing it, because it was like going through trauma. But by doing that and by putting the words in the document, it was almost like it extracted the negativity from my head and put it on a in the book, and then my head was sort of more freed up, if that makes sense. So it was very therapeutic, yeah.
I can imagine. That's amazing. And what was the response like? I can only imagine that it was great. But what was that like for you as well, to see everyone respond to the book?
Yeah, every single time I get a review, it's just like it makes my day. And
Wow.
because it when you I think you have a kind of, what's it called, imposter syndrome when you do something like that, and you kind of
Imagine.
not sure if it's going to do well or if people are going to like it. So when the positive reviews start coming in, it's just so like it just gives me life.
Yeah, no, it's so brave to put yourself out there in like an object, that's going to be there forever. So number one, thank you, but also just well done, and I'm glad that you're getting the good reviews, and I'm glad that it
Thank you.
encourages you too. So I guess for the people watching this podcast, for the graduates, for students, what are some tools that you've learned along the way to that you could share with others to help them with their mental health?
Yeah, there's a lot of different things, and it's like usually for me it's not just one thing, but it's like a combination, like finding the right formula. But for me personally, like my medication that I still take now is like a absolute like lifesaver, in terms of if I didn't take it, I'd most likely relapse again. And it took me a while to find the right medication. Like, I've been on so many different like pills and stuff that it took me like kind of being honest and saying to doctors like what was working and what wasn't, for them to kind of find what worked. So it's like a case of not accepting, like, if a medication is not working, to kind of not think that's the only answer, like there's other options. And I also had CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, which was really good to help me kind of process things. And I just try and do the best I can to look after myself, like to sleep well and to exercise and to eat well, and limit alcohol and stuff.
In your book, you mentioned that you did quite a bit of traveling, and that this helped in your recovery. So could you just tell us a bit more about that, where you traveled and what you enjoy about traveling in general?
It was funny because the year I was like starting to recover, I made a bit of a like decision to because I'd never been anywhere by myself before, like a holiday by myself. So I booked a trip to Turkey, which was like a very sporty kind of activity holiday, because I was the same year getting into like getting quite active. And it gave me a lot of confidence, because it was a bit like on the edge of my comfort zone. And like kind of proving to myself that even though I've had this mental illness, I'm still capable of having an independent like trip by myself. So it gave me a lot of encouragement and enjoyment to do more of that. And I was quite lucky around the same time, a friend, it was kind of like a more spontaneous than a planned trip, but ended up going to Sri Lanka with a couple of friends and really enjoying that. And then the year after, I think it was a one of my uni friends kind of, he already knew that he wanted to do South America, and then kind of put it in the WhatsApp group. And then suddenly a few of us were like, yeah, we want to do that as well. And it kind of formed into a really nice trip. So yeah, I think it does wonders, like in terms of broadening your horizons, and like it all the cheesiness that comes with it, like you find yourself and stuff. It's just it can depend on where you go, like you appreciate what you have at home, and it's just nice to have a change of scenery and a change of pace, I think, like to like a bit of escapism and to just make memories and stuff.
So I also saw in your book that you incorporate playlists as well. And so can you speak to that and how maybe music played a part in your recovery and how it influenced you?
Yeah, I've always been into music, and there's some songs that resonate with me more than others, and yeah, they're in the book. And it's funny speaking now, since the book came out, there's probably 100 more songs. I, you know, if it was like a live playlist, I'd be adding to it all the time. But yeah, I think it's always got the potential to turn a bad get day into like it to help you cope or to cope with stress, and it's like can cheer you up. But also, I've had times before where I've been like really sad, and I've listened to a sad song and I've had a cry, and it's made me feel a lot better just having that release. Like, so it kind of helps you with all these emotions. And I guess also at work, sometimes I play music to help me focus. And like, I probably did that when I was at uni as well, just put on like a more focused piano or classical music playlist, and it has a really good effect.
Yeah, it sounds like a lifestyle almost, just to
Yeah.
like self-care, monitoring how you're doing, which I think is something that everyone can apply, you know, to their lives, which so I love that. And then I mean, again, for the students and graduates, studying can be very stressful. Looking for a job after you graduate can be very stressful. Just since graduating, but also during your time at Hertfordshire, do you have any specific advice for those listening to the episode?
I guess because like my first kind of job, I almost call it like a first career, because I sort of fell into it and then tried to make it work and didn't work. So and what actually got me into what I'm doing now is volunteering, which it wasn't how I imagined when I was at uni how I imagined my career path would be.
Yeah.
But it was like going from earning a bit of money to earning zero money, but getting really good experience in what I want to do. Because after uni, like you're going to spend most of your life in a career until you retire, so you might as well do something which gives you the fulfillment, and like,
Yeah.
and also your well-being, like put that first over earning money is what I'd say.
Do you know what? It's so funny. I say exactly the same thing. I had a time, and you know, obviously, it's a very fortunate situation to be in if you have that choice that you are able to kind of take a cut in pay to pursue what you want to do. But I definitely agree that I would encourage it too, because I felt like for me, I was able to tick off all the things I didn't like, and it kind of eventually I narrowed down to like, oh, I like marketing. And so, yeah, I totally agree with that. I think that's great advice. So, in terms of you, James, what's next? What can we expect to see from you?
I'm trying to get a second book out there, but it's proven difficult. So it's a collection of mental health poems, and
Amazing.
I've been trying to. So I don't know if it's finished yet or if it needs more. I'm happy to add more, but it's hard to find a publisher and an agent. So I'm kind of like trying to do that, but that's not like my main thing because it's not my. Because I've got a full-time job and stuff, so it's just whenever I have the time. But I had a really good year last year, so me and my wife had a wedding, and then we've got a honeymoon next month. We're going to India, so I'm really
Oh,
excited for that.
amazing.
Yeah, and then hopefully after that, we're sort of thinking about starting a family. And these are all things like when I first got mental illness, I thought would be impossible for me to have these like life things that other people have. So it's like really nice to kind of be going through them now to sort of like. Made it to that point.
Yeah, what a testimony. Absolutely. I mean, well, firstly, congratulations for
Thank
last year. Secondly, very jealous. India is going to be amazing. And also super looking forward to this second book. And so I guess if there's any future publishers at Hearts right now, they should,
Please, yeah.
link up with you and make that happen. That would
Yeah.
be really good. But I love that you're because I guess, your first book was maybe informative, educational, but poetry, I think that's a really nice alternative kind of art
Yeah.
form
Yeah.
for people to receive help. So I love that. Is there any way that we can stay in touch with you? Any websites? I don't know if you've got, social media handles that we can follow, but it would be great to, just stay along your journey and see what happens next.
Yeah, of course. So I think I'm James Lindsay underscore 23 on Instagram, and then the same on Twitter without the underscore. And yeah, I'm on all the socials, and I on those accounts I've got like a Linktree link, so
Oh,
when you do
nice.
that it goes to all my blogs, podcasts, everything all in one place. So and I try and keep that updated. So obviously when this podcast is out, I add it to my Linktree.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much for number one,
Thank
your
you.
time, but for two, for sharing your story with everyone, because it really is powerful. And I think empowering people to take ownership, as you mentioned earlier, medically over their mental health, all those different areas. I think it's really important to have advocates like yourself. So thank you so much. I certainly learned a lot, and I know that everyone listening to this will too. And we'll be sure to stay tuned to all that you're up to, honeymoon included. So thanks again.
Thanks. It's an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Take care.
You too.